From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital has a new CEO. After a nationwide search, the hospital's board of directors chose Rose Lawhorn, the current chief nursing officer, to fill the vacancy left by Chuck Bill. Lawhorn has been with Bartlett since 1993. She has worked in many positions at the hospital, including emergency department director, a staff nurse, a data entry clerk, and as an assistant chief clinical officer before becoming the head nurse. She'll start on April 4th and will earn a salary of $320,000 a year, about $33,000 less than what Bill was making when he retired. In another news, massive, huge, historic. That's how journalists, economists, and politicians are describing the most recent COVID relief plan, a $1.9 trillion bill that passed in Congress earlier this month. One significant part of the bill that's gotten a lot of attention is an expanded child tax credit. Alaska Public Media's Maiwa Aina reports economists and child advocates say the new bill could have a lasting impact on many Alaskan families.
All of the economists and leaders of child welfare organizations that I spoke to about the expanded child tax credit said the same thing.
We're excited for the new federal dollars.
We're super excited.
Very excited.
I think there is a lot to be excited about.
That last voice was University of Alaska economics professor Musin Ghatabi. He says the relief bill removes a lot of barriers to aid that typically come with bills like this. He says it's just a lot of money and a lot of people will be eligible for it.
My broad takeaway is massive injection. We've never seen anything like this, right? And so really well targeted towards lower income households, meaning in terms of the impact. The fact that there are advance payments and it's fully refundable is a game changer.
With the child tax credit, families could get as much as $300 per month per child starting in July. Even people who don't normally get the tax credit because they had no income in the last year could potentially qualify for these funds. And it's a direct payment, no strings attached, kind of like the stimulus payments lots of people are seeing pop up in their bank accounts. Ghatabi says that's a big deal too.
And that's the part that potentially makes a dent in terms of people's finances.
It is a temporary stimulus. But Ghatabi says those extra funds, particularly for low-income people, will stretch. There is clear research that even a one-time boost to a family's income could totally change the trajectory of a person's life, Ghatabi says. Finally, being able to buy a car, for example, could lead to a better job and more earnings over time. It could also simply mean less trips to the food bank, says Trevor Storrs.
When you have a family that struggles, not just day to day, but at times hour by hour, $200 feels like winning the lottery.
Storrs is the CEO and president of the Alaska Children's Trust, which advocates for child welfare in Alaska. Storrs says in addition to the child credit, other components of the bill, like more money for food stamps and money for child care, will also contribute to Alaska children's well-being. Stephanie Berglund is CEO of Thread Alaska, which advocates on behalf of child care providers in the state. Berglund is anticipating over $92 million in child care support and relief for Alaska from the most recent aid packages. That's enough money, Berglund says, to boost the child care industry to function better than it did before the pandemic.
There's an opportunity so that child care can be more accessible and more affordable for families. Early educators can be paid a livable wage, you know, and we have a stronger overall transformed child care system.
Other organizations are thinking about the long-term impact of these short-term funds too. Clark Halverson is CEO of the United Way of Anchorage. He says calls to the 211 helpline are still 300% higher than normal, even a year into the pandemic. People need help with childcare, food, and rent relief. But Halverson says the pandemic just made an existing problem even worse. Halverson hopes these federal funds will start to address the root problems that have caused so many Alaskans to struggle in the last year.
We often talk about when are we going to get back to normal. We're trying to kind of change that dialogue a little bit and say we really want to create a new normal, one where people have equal opportunity.
Details about how the funding will be distributed and individual eligibility requirements are still coming, but most are in agreement that it will make a significant difference for families in Alaska, especially those that continue to struggle the most. In Anchorage, I'm Maya Wa'aina.
And back here in Southeast, Sitka's Marine Mammal Stranding Network headed to a nearby island last week to conduct its first necropsy on a dead humpback whale in 5 years. They wanted to learn more about why the whale died. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports.
The Coast Guard reported the dead 47-foot female humpback to NOAA on Sunday evening. It had washed ashore on the south side of Khrushchev Island. Bad weather delayed the team until Thursday, and when they finally arrived, they found the whale in a different position.
When we got out there, the whale had rotated 180 degrees and then flipped over onto its stomach from all the surf and swell out there.
Lauren Wild is a fisheries technology professor at UAS and the volunteer coordinator for Sitka Stranding Network. She says that the whale had already started to decompose when they arrived. It's a smell that she's gotten used to over the years, but for newbies, it can be shocking.
It's funny to watch people's facial expression change as they move towards this whale, and they just kind of have this look of horror, like, do I have to keep walking forward or can I stop now?
Despite the smell, the team of UAS researchers and local volunteers from the city, school district, and Sitka Tribe of Alaska got to work cutting the whale open. It took 5.5 hours and 10 people to take photos and notes, collect tissue samples, and examine the whale for signs of trauma.
It takes a while and a lot of muscle power to cut through the blubber and then flens that back and peel it back and then cut through the muscle to access the inner organs.
Conducting a necropsy can be dangerous, Wild says. If the whale's bloated, responders have to take care that it doesn't explode when they cut it open. Carcasses can also attract bears, and the scenes can be hectic, with lots of people working quickly with sharp tools. All of the responders have received specialized training from NOAA.
We just have to be really careful because whales are, you know, really oily. The blubber is just really oily. So as you start cutting, the animal's just oozing oils. And so that makes things really slippery.
Wild says whale necropsies in Sitka Sound are fairly uncommon. When they receive a notice of a dead whale, they can't always get to it. Or sometimes it's washed away by the time they do. But conducting necropsies is important because it can teach researchers about whales and any changes that might be happening in their environments.
I like to think of a dead whale as kind of like a gold mine of opportunity, and there's always something and information that can be gleaned from it. And it's just a matter of trying to get as many people to help figure that out in the short amount of time that you have.
As far as what killed this humpback, Wild says they didn't find a smoking gun. The whale looked healthy, and its belly was full of herring. But they did find some evidence of blunt trauma. They sent samples off to the lab, and they'll have to wait for the results to find out more. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
A reform bill to give more autonomy to Alaska's ferry system is advancing through the legislature. It would remake the Marine Transportation Advisory Board as an operations and planning board with more clout to steer the Alaska Marine Highway system. The bill is sponsored by House Speaker Luis Stutz and would also give legislative leaders the power to appoint 4 of the board's 9 members.
One of the main differences from my perspective is the other bill allows the governor to choose all the board members, and I think having a little variety makes it a much more even board.
It cleared the House Transportation Committee last week. The governor's ferry working group recommended that the Marine Highway be given more autonomy for long-range planning. But the bill does have its skeptics. MATSU Republican Representative Kevin McCabe wanted to amend the bill to exclude appointees with current or past union, but it failed. The freshman lawmaker from Big Lake also complained that the Marine Highway's fleet was overbuilt, running vehicle ferries to communities without cars.
What roads are there in Tenneke? We're carrying cars to we're using a 300-foot car-carrying ferry to go to a village that has no roads.
He suggested the state contract out day services with smaller craft that cater to walk-off passengers. Tenneke Springs Mayor Dan Kennedy says the Marine Highway's full-sized vessels are well-suited for runs out to the Southeast Island Village. For more on this story, go to ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.